going to his brothers who happened to be right along the trade route, that saved his life, in essence. He was sold instead of killed. The older brother saw that opportunity and said, this is what we could do, and appease his conscience a little bit. And so that led Joseph, I believe, by providence to Egypt, and which is going to take care of something that God wants to do later. So Joseph was a faithful man. He was able to interpret dreams. God was blessing him. He gains favor with those who are around him and eventually becomes second in command to the Pharaoh there in Egypt. Because of that, because of the famine later, it brings Joseph's family to Egypt, and they stand before him, and it's, as you think about it, it's about 22 years that has passed since they have seen each other, since they sold Joseph into slavery, and since they're standing before him as one of the leaders of Egypt. And, we don't have time to go through all that story, but that's, you fast forward things, that's, think about the periods of time that pass in the verses that we read sometimes. It's important to recognize that. Joseph went from, being a 17-year-old man to, being, close to 40 and has risen to power. And you think about today what happens. You see a young man who's 17 or 18 years old and then he's close to 40. A lot happens in life then, doesn't it? And so Joseph is matured and he's fulfilling God's purpose. And eventually then Jacob leads his family some 200 miles down to Egypt to deal with the situation of the famine. But notice, if you look in the scriptures and read those stories, at Beersheba they stopped and offered sacrifices to God. And I mentioned last week that we saw Abraham do that over and over again. He would stop in certain places in this land where he was a foreigner and make an altar and offer worship to God. And so that influence is starting to grow and starting to be something that people of the land are going to be seeing, these altars to Jehovah. So Joseph made sure that his people were taken care of, and they end up in this part of the Nile Delta. We talked about that's a very fertile region, the land of Goshen. That's given to Joseph's family to start over and to be their permanent home. They came from up in Canaan's land down to here, and some people might think, well, this isn't the land of promise that God promised them. Why are they here? Well, God has a reason. It's a purpose for them to be here. And so this is where they start. It's a fertile land. It's a good land. And this is where they, they begin to think of the people of God. This is from Jacob, whose name has been changed to Israel, and these 12 sons that he has, that we're going to see how that develops here. Note the time period, if you're kind of keeping track of that as we've been going through this, about 1662 BC is where we are now here, before Christ. So this is where we are, and a lot of what's going to take place about God's covenant people is going to take place right here. I know that's not super easy to see, but some of the maps are going to be a little bit bigger. But, we're going to watch them come out of the land of Goshen in Egypt. We're going to watch them come down in the wilderness, down to Sinai, come back up. This is really the overview that we'll kind of buzz through here in the minutes that we have of the route that they most likely took. We do our best to figure that out by the cities in which they stopped and the places that they were where different events happened and the things that are told to us about where they had an interaction with, for instance, the Moabites or the Edomites and what they were allowed to do and where they probably went, and parts of the reasons why we're able to maybe think about the route that they most likely took has to do with the landscape too. That's one of the reasons we study some of this in geography. And we're going to notice a little bit later in the lesson that Moab didn't want them to come through their land, or Edom rather, and so they had to, and they also, the landscape it takes is in play there because there's a pretty big group of people. And again, just like Abraham, and more so, you've got animals that have to be watered. You have flocks that have to graze. So you have to find the path that you can go through and do that while God's providential care is part of it as well. So a lot of things to think about when you think about this, probably with women and children, this 2 million plus group of people moving through the land. So imagine just for a moment, take the city of Columbus, let's grab the suburbs, 2 million people traveling as a caravan through this area, crossing the Red Sea, down into the wilderness desert area, standing around the mountain while Moses is getting the law. Just imagine that group of people and make that real, because that's a lot. And you can see the difficulties that came, and you can, it makes it a little more understandable maybe when you hear about things like them complaining to Moses about the food and the water. You know, it's not just a group like our size, you know, a little dissatisfied with what's going on. These are some real things. Now, yes, they need to depend on God, but this is a big group. And this is the people of God that we're going to talk about as they come out of Egypt. Yes, Alan. Well, you got Sinai down here. Mount Hor is up around here. The anti-Lebanons come down from here and kind of keep the highland down through this region. They don't really get into the hill country. They're more in these few mountains that are down here. And so it's not, if I'm remembering correctly, it's not so much a big range like the Rockies like we see today, but there's several mountainous areas, through the wilderness and down through this area. But it's not, you know, they can travel, if I remember correctly, they can kind of travel through the bases of these mountains, without being blocked by a range where you have to find a specific pass to get through, if that makes sense. Yeah. So then they've got camp to set up. They've got the tabernacle, to set up in different places that they go. And again, got to find enough to feed the animals and water as you go through these areas too. So, lots of fun things to think about. We're going to kind of just buzz through some of these slides. They're informational since you don't have it in a handout. As of yet, but just to kind of put our minds in the right place. So, you know, you think about the time, the exact time when they left Egypt is not given to us in the Bible. The names of the pharaohs are not given, specifically. It's hard to pinpoint exactly which pharaoh it was, because Egypt kept pretty good records, for the most part, but trying to decide exactly which pharaoh it was that they fell out of favor with as Joseph had passed on. But we do know from the history of things that foreigners were not those who were welcome in Egypt. And only on a few occasions did that happen, when Joseph was there. And so, that's something to keep in mind. That's an important part of why it seems like that God put them where he put them. As you read about Joseph, it wasn't even permitted for him to eat with the Egyptians that he was in good graces with, because they didn't permit things like that to happen. So, you know, keep that in mind. So, you know, I'm going to skip through a couple of these. Think about the providence of God when you consider why they ended up in Egypt. You know, the Hebrew people in Egypt during the reign of a bad Pharaoh, here in Genesis 15 and verse 13 and 14. Says, then he said to Abraham, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. Also the nation whom they serve I will judge. Afterwards they will come out with great possessions. So this is something that God told Abraham when Abraham was alive, shortly after Abraham had left his land in Genesis 12 and was on his journey to, to the promised land. This is part of the promise being fulfilled. So this is, you know, 100 years or so before this happened. God's saying, you know, there's going to be something that God has a purpose in what he's doing is what we want to see. So, what is that purpose? Well, think about this for just a moment. The people in Canaan were happy to mingle with the people that were coming into the land in one sense. You see Abraham have several different interactions with the people of the land that were friendly interactions. There was conflict here and there, but he had several friendly interactions. And so that would have been such a case where if the people just went there and settled and his nation began to grow from Abraham's seed and they didn't go to Egypt and didn't fulfill this part of the story, that's very possible that they would not have learned to depend upon God as they should. And so God in his wisdom, sends them or makes it such that they end up in Egypt, where Egypt is not welcoming in that way. That's one thing to think about as you think about this covenant of people of God. So by his design, basically, that they end up out of Canaan and in Egypt, where eventually They're not welcome there. They're a foreign race. They're getting bigger. They're become a threat to Egypt because of how big they're becoming. And so Egypt decides to keep them quarantined, to make them slaves, and to use them for their purpose. And in this, what's a lesson here that God is teaching them? What do you think? If they are in a place like this, oppressed by someone that they have no control over, it's not a friendly place, what might they learn from God? Yeah, to rely on Him, to depend upon Him. Who's going to save them? They can't save themselves, right? And it takes them a while to learn this, but, you know, eventually they begin to see as all these things happen with the plagues and with how they come out of the land and the care that they receive, that they're able to be sustained throughout the wilderness and on their way to the promised land. It's all because of God. They have trouble wrapping their minds around that, it seems like, because they constantly complain and they challenge Him several times, but it's one way that God's able to teach them some things. So, you know, this is a little bit blown up of what we're talking about. And you see the route from the land of Goshen here. And I'm just going to touch on it here. I think there's a slide a little bit later, but we're moving quickly. You know, this is the Red Sea. This is one of the arms of the Red Sea. The likely place that they cross, we don't know. It doesn't tell us specifically. Probably someplace up here because of the cities that it says that they went to and because they went into Sinai. Don't look at the map here and say, wow, maybe people were right. Maybe it wasn't a big deal that they crossed the Red Sea up here in one of these places. This is a large body of water, and you're getting a couple million people across. It's not something they could have done on their own. Sometimes we think about that they crossed down here someplace. Well, that's not likely because of where it was. And, you know, that's more like crossing the ocean. It's not that God couldn't do it. But, you know, where they were and where they're headed, it's most likely it was in this region, which if you think about what we studied about the Nile was sometimes, the delta of the Nile and the valley of the Nile was miles wide. The Nile River itself, was several hundred feet wide and deep. And that's the Nile River. You know, compare that to where they are here. It took something miraculous for them to get across there. Let's be realistic about it. It wasn't down here, but, you know, it still took a miraculous work of God for them to get across there. If you've ever traveled and you head out west and you're headed towards Missouri or someplace like that and you cross the Mississippi River, the Nile's bigger than that, all right? And this is bigger than that. So just think about, you know, the ability to be able to get across there. So, as we kind of think about that, you know, the book of Exodus opens with them under this kind of severe bondage, and the things that they were forced to work under, the conditions they were forced to work under. And Pharaoh, afraid of this growing population, orders at one point all of the baby boys to be thrown into the Nile River. This is before Moses was born, or at the time that Moses was born. This is how the people of Egypt are starting to feel about the Israelite nation because of their growing fear. So, you know, Moses, we know, was rescued from that. There's some references there in Acts and Hebrews that remind us of that. So in the Egyptian Delta, you know, Moses was rescued from there, and grew to about 40 years old, became, he was raised by Egyptians. So he had contact and context with the people of Egypt and knew some of those things about them. Eventually he had to flee for his life though because he was loyal to his people, and there was a couple of incidents there that caused him to have to leave. So he knew the Egyptian ways and he knew he was educated in those ways, but then he left. And it talks about, as you read through the book of Genesis here, that when he left, traveled to the wilderness of Sinai and south into the land of Midian. And he worked here for a shepherd for the next 40 years. Now, this is important to recognize because God chooses Moses as leader of his people later. And where does God take them? Well, they come out this way and they go down here. Moses knew this area well. So there's another part of the wisdom of God and who he chose for a leader and why, for multiple reasons, but again, we see some providence of where Moses was and where Moses spent 40 years of his life. You're going to see the number 40 a lot. And so you kind of think about those things and what God put in place for, you know, for some of that. So, he appears to Moses, sends him back to Egypt to bring the Israelites out of the land. And, you know, we're fast forwarding through a lot of the story because we're just taking a kind of a big overview of the things that, that happen here. Pharaoh refuses to let them go just as God predicted. And, you know, God uses that occasion to show that Pharaoh is not God, that he is God, and sends the plagues on the people of Egypt. And of course, after the 10th plague, Pharaoh agrees and decides, yes, he will let the people go. I took out the chart with the plagues in it because we don't have time to talk about the plagues tonight or this morning. But so as the Israelites are ready to leave the city, it says, you know, if you look there in Exodus 12 and verse 37, talks about them leaving from the city of Ramses. The Egyptians are ready at this point for them to go. The death of the firstborn has affected the entire nation of Egypt. And you can imagine the mourning that it talks about, the wailing that occurred because of that. Even Pharaoh's son was not, exempt from that. And so they're departing here from the land of Goshen and they're starting to head down through this, through these regions. And some of these cities are mentioned. Succoth is one of them. And so that's why, you know, where they cross, probably someplace in this region, on this northern arm of the Red Sea, the Gulf of Suez, that we call today. So as they are, you know, headed that direction, the first two camping places that it mentions were Succoth and at Etham. And so that's how we know that that's kind of the direction that they were going, and that's how they were approaching the Red Sea as far as where they may have crossed. The Lord goes before them, as you read there in Exodus. He's leading them with a pillar of cloud in the day and a pillar of fire at night. So God is very providentially and very miraculously leading them on this journey. They can see the power of God. They have seen the power of God from all the plagues that just happened. Hopefully this is impressing upon them. They're coming out of, this impresses that they are coming out of oppression. And the only way they're coming out of that is from God. And they're about to be taken into a land where they desperately need God. So if you notice on a couple of the other maps, and maybe it'll come up here in a second, they could have, if you just imagine with me here from all the maps you've seen, they're headed to the promised land, right? So, oh yeah, that's right here. Here's the way of the sea. Here's the extension of the way of the sea and the way of Shur that we talked about before that go up through Palestine, right? So here's an established trade route that you don't have to cross the Red Sea on, or you have to cross marshland instead of an actual body of water. So they could have turned from Succoth and just started up the coast and go right into the land of Canaan. But that's not what God did. They need to learn some things still. They need to come out of Egypt and depend upon God and be a people and understand what he's going to do for them and that he is their God. Come out of the paganistic society that they have been a part of for the last 400 years and depend upon the God of heaven. And so instead of taking them along this established path or along this established path and up through the hill country, he turns and takes them into the wilderness instead. Interesting to think about. There's obviously a reason that God is taking this large group of people into the wilderness. It says that they carried Joseph's bones with them as they had promised their fathers before his death because that's one of the things that he had asked about. So they leave Egypt with a vast company of about 603,000 plus women, children, cattle, and slaves. That's where I come up with the number, the estimates that a lot of researchers come up with is, you know, maybe around 2 million people. We're not told that number for sure, but we are told this number. This is able men of war of age, able to fight. So pretty good size crowd that they're leaving Egypt and are heading out. So again, as I brought up, the shortest route is along the shoreline, the way of Shur, or the way of the sea. I guess I got ahead of myself there, you know, that we've studied before. That's the easiest way to get there, but that's not the way that God takes them. You know, they would have met conflict that they're not ready for, and God wanted them to learn to depend upon him. That's just what, you know, we want to take from that idea and to be able to appreciate. Pharaoh sends his army after them. We have the incident at the Red Sea here, where God again shows his power with those types of things and what he is able to do. And you know, again, we're not exactly sure where it is that they crossed. But I'm going to skip through some of the things we already talked about. Several times we see them complaining about different things, but we see the route that God sends them on, which is down through Marah. That's a reference that we have in the scripture of where they headed. And the next stopping place was Elam, and we don't have time to buzz through all of these, but you know, they're in the material that I'll hand out to you that talks about the different places they went, and down through the wilderness of Sinai, and eventually down to you know, some of the places that they were camping, the wilderness of Sin. There's several incidences that we read about in the book of Exodus where they need water or they need food. They have to depend on God to provide this for them. That's the whole point of them being in the wilderness, is that they're dependent upon God for all of these things that they're doing. And so when you kind of look at this Sinai Peninsula, you know, that's where they dwell on their way to the promised land. He feeds them manna. We find different incidents where they are attacked by people and others are oppressing them. And again, they have to depend on God to be able to survive and to thrive and head towards the land that he is giving them. So I'm going to have to skip through some of this because we still have two lessons to get through in two more weeks about the kingdoms. But I'll print this off for you guys so you can kind of look through it and see where everything is. But, Mount Sinai is where, you know, they end up, where the law is given, down at the bottom of that peninsula. So here's kind of a picture or view of that area, that region. You know, we see God giving his covenant to the people. We know about their sin there where they, erect the golden calf, while Moses is up getting the law, the irony of that they're worshiping a pagan god while miraculous things are happening on the mountain and the finger of God is writing for them on the tablet, the law that he wants for his people and to set them apart. So, you know, we think about all of those things that happened as God was doing these things for them. He's still having to teach them, still having to show them, the miraculous things that he will do and how he will lead them and how he puts them together as a nation. So those are all things that happen as they're traveling through that area, and we see the promises to Abraham being fulfilled. So, you know, as that happened and there was sin involved, with them going into the land and spying it out and then deciding that they would not depend on God to take the land, eventually then we see them wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And, you know, this is, again, not a class about the specifics that happened in the Bible story, but the wilderness that they wander in, is, you know, this, the area of Sinai in that peninsula area that we're talking about. So here's some quick pictures of what's there. There's not a lot there. And so as they're wandering in the wilderness for the 40 years, and so waiting for that generation to die who did not regard God as they should have and give him the glory and understand that he could have helped them take the land when they first approached it. Look at where they are. They have to depend upon him. They have to have their care and their provision from him. And you know, as the new generation comes up that has not been in Egypt, you know, they're learning to care, to depend upon God for those things as well. And so, you know, this is the area where they spend a lot of that time wandering around, as they come from Sinai and up through those areas. Again, it talks about, as you read through the book of Exodus, talks about the different complaints that they had. They wanted meat. They wanted, something besides manna after he provided them with bread. They wanted meat, so he provides them quail. He also, you know, chastises them and punishes them for complaining in different ways and at different times. So you see that as they're traveling through all of these areas south of the promised land, learning to depend upon him and learning to give themselves to his care and to his providence. And that's one of the things that we see during that period of time. We didn't have time to go through and read about each stop, but as you do that, if you read through the book of Exodus and some of the book of Numbers, you see the different places that they were, and as you get your map out and realize where they were and the area that they're in, you can see the how God is grooming them and helping them to understand who he is and why they need to give him themselves over to him. So, you know, they start to come back up. We're gonna have to end a little sooner than I wanted to. So if you get the map that was back there to fill out, that was the pop quiz. So now all of you can take it home and cheat and look at a map and fill it out. But that's how the land was divided up, not the 12 tribes of Israel, because those two things are different. So if you took that map with you, that's where we're going to try to get to today, to end with them coming into the land and taking the land, and the land was divided up. So I'm going to say that before time runs out, and then I'll finish this. So when you look at that map, that's how the land was divided up. So if you can, you know, on the honor system, look at that and see if, you know, from what you have read, if you can fill out where these different peoples received their inheritance in the promised land. And I'll put the answers up next week. But just as we finish up here, you know, after they have wandered in the wilderness, they're starting to head back up towards the promised land. And as they're starting to go that way, they're on the right side of things, but they run into a problem here in being able to go through Edom. Maybe I got my slides out of order here. Let me skip through this because we already talked about it. So here's their 40 years of wandering, probably in this area of the wilderness. And this is where they stay for God to take care of them. Moses ends up sinning in this area by not giving the glory to God and what has happened there. He speaks to the rock, and that was in the wilderness of Zin, which is right up here near the bottom of the Dead Sea. Here's the other part of the Gulf of I'm sorry, not the Red Sea. Yeah, the Dead Sea. Here's the other Gulf of the Red Sea. Here's the Dead Sea up here. This is probably the area, Kadesh Barnea. You read that about that a lot in the areas where they're traveling around. And because of that, Moses wasn't able to go into the land of Canaan. So God, as they come out of the wilderness, they come to a different route. They go up around Mount Hor. Edom doesn't want them to come through their land. Maybe you can imagine why. You got a couple million people coming through, taking the resources, the water wells. The king of Edom says no. And God told the Israelites they could not have that land. So they have to go around. They end up cutting through part of it, but they basically can't just go up through here like they wanted to, because of that conflict there. So they have to find another route. They go around Mount Hor. Aaron dies on that, as they're headed up that way. He was 123 years old. You know, and they end up basically coming up around Mount Hor up this way. They're kind of almost in the promised land, but, this is the really fast version of it. I'm trying to get to the other map. There we go. So they end up cutting through this way and up through and around Moab, if you read the passages, and we're going to pick up next week with them ready to cross the Jordan River up here. So this is their route, wandering in the wilderness and then coming around and up this way. So think about the landscape we've talked about and how that falls into all that. So there we go. Thank you very much. We'll pick up with them right there next week.